Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Real quick before we start the show, just wanted to let you guys know you can get the show 2 days early by joining our Patreon. Even for a buck, you can listen to the show 2 days early. Go to patreon.com/analogtalk and we got a bunch of stuff over there. Check it out and enjoy the episode.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Analog Talk, a film photography podcast. I'm your host, Chris.
I'm Tim.
And on today's show, we have Michael Ash Smith. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. We're excited to chat. Your work is so moody and emotional. So we're ready here.
Moody and emotional. All right, let's do this.
Do you mind, for listeners who may not know you, can you introduce yourself and tell us how you got into photography?
Sure. So my name is Michael Ash Smith. I got into photography roughly around 2008, 2009, probably early 2008. I don't have any, grandeur stories about being a photographer all my life or anything like that. I've always been interested in photography, but always on the creative side. I always enjoyed looking at it and seeing people's photographs. And some friends had cameras and things like that, and I found it interesting. But it wasn't until in my mid to late 20s where I really jumped at it. And a friend who I worked with was selling some old Nikon N65, I think it is. Something like, it's 35 millimeter, and he was like, it's yours for $40. And I was like, all right. So I actually still have that camera.
Nice.
And I just would go around on the weekend, and the crazy story behind me is that I was in banking for 9 or 10 years. And
I
switched careers at 29 to be a photographer.
Wow.
And I got this camera, and I would just, every Saturday morning, I'd wake up early and I would just drive around for 4 or 5 hours and just kind of fell in love with it. And that was probably that was 24, 25 years old. And then it just kind of stuck with me.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't until digital started making a headway into the market where you could get one for relatively cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could practice more because the film was just expensive.
Right.
Yep.
Totally. And, in my early 20s, it was just not conducive to my lifestyle.
Yeah.
But that's how I found it. And that's how eventually I kind of just stuck with it and learned the camera and just had fun. And then, of course, somebody's comes along and then says something like, hey, can you photograph me? And I'm like, uh-oh. Yeah, sure. And then it just rolls from there.
Wow. Well, I have so many questions because.
All right, go into it.
How did you, when did you make the switch back from digital to film? Because I feel we all have that kind of story, but your work is so interesting that I want to hear about how your jump back to film and then just how how did you come to make this kind of work?
So I started, digital is I don't have any preference to I'm never guys oh man, digital sucks or oh man, film sucks. I don't really care what you shoot, go shoot it. But the great thing about digital is that I can practice. I think the thing with that was I started photographing these weird – I live in Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania has – in November and February, it's really foggy. It's constantly foggy. And
it really
I just fell in love with it and would go out and – I would take the digital camera and just learn. And so I just kept shooting and shooting and shooting, testing settings. I would write that all down in a notebook, come back, take a look at what I was doing and the data and all that stuff. And then I would go see other inspirational photographers from maybe not in that current time, but back in time a bit. And then I'd say, all right, well, how does that look achieved? And every single time I looked at something, it was film. And yeah. I'm not a big editor. So I hate spending time in Photoshop. I hate spending time in Lightroom.
Me too.
It's just not my thing that I enjoy doing. So I just started speaking to some friends. And I had the N65, but it was 35 millimeter. So it really wasn't getting me to where I wanted to go. My editing wasn't getting me to where I wanted to go. And I knew the tools that I had at my disposal weren't. So I had a friend who saw this kind of foggy aesthetic, so to speak. And I would post on Flickr, if you guys remember Flickr.
Yes.
And Flickr would, you know, in the day, it was free. Mm-hmm. So I kind of gained some, you know, if you remember, you could hit the explore page, which is basically like how Instagram and TikTok work now. Mm-hmm. And if you hit explore, then you got tons of views and things like that. And it kind of bumped up your ego a bit.
But I remember that.
Oh, yeah. It was like a rush.
When your photo hit explore, it was like, I'm the best.
And so, yeah, exactly. And I think I remember calling my partner at that time one time, like, I made explore. It's so insignificant now, but then it was just huge. And in any case, all these photographs I started taking, I could never get it to look the exact way that I wanted. And then a friend of mine, acquaintance of mine in the industry, you know, I think we were talking one time over Gmail chat. And you know, he was like, I think you need to dabble in the film. And I'm like, I'm not a fan of this 35 millimeter, blah, blah, blah. He's like, no, like get into medium format and get this camera. And he told me the RZ67. So I found an RZ67 on Craigslist for like $400.
I was about to say how much.
Tell me about it. Mint condition, 3 lenses, comes in like a case that looks like you're walking through an airport with a bomb and like everything. And like a Pelican,
right now.
I know.
And it was like, and I had no idea how to shoot it or anything. And so.
And it's huge. You must have been like, what the heck? Like,
yeah. And I grabbed some film. I'm pretty sure it was Tri-X because I'm pretty sure everybody uses Kodak Tri-X to start. And then I brought it with me to a session that was like, at that time, I was starting to get into portraits and engagement stuff and things like that and weddings. And I brought it to one for fun and I fired off the whole roll and I got it back and I was like, oh shit. Yeah. That's it. That's pretty much what I was looking for. And that was it. That was the beginning of where it flipped back to film. And from that moment, which I'm guessing was 2010, maybe.
Wow.
I started going backwards and removing digital from my arsenal. And I always kept a digital camera around. I still have one. I need it here and there for some of the work I do. But it kind of disappeared through the, you know, it was just kind of a backup situation kind of camera. And then that's when I started to explore different cameras and the different films and started processing the black and white of my own. And that's how I started getting down that world of my vibe or my look.
Yeah, your fine art stuff.
Right.
What I love, we say it a bunch of times on the show, just like how stories collide so much. And I just, I feel so connected to that because, you know, we're not like a digital bashing podcast by any means. I mean, we do primarily talk about film and, you know, stuff like that. But I forgot how much I learned with my digital camera until you said that. Like, it really taught me.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, what a great
tool. You could just mess up. And then look at it and delete. And I mess with long exposures and bulb mode and multiple exposures. And it was just so simple to just toy with it. And then all I did was transfer those settings pretty much over. I mean, there's a little bit more than that, as you know, but it's a great tool. It's amazing that my daughter is so lucky. Like, she can take a camera and go out and mess up 40,000 times and keep going. And it's so simple.
Make sure she's ready before you're like, okay, here's your first roll of film.
Right. Yeah, I know. And even my partner right now, the woman that I'm with, like, even she's been in the digital for 3 or 4 years, and I kind of got her hooked on the Instax film.
Yeah.
And now she's craving it's the like best. A drug, you know. She shot 3 packs the other day in like this controlled lighting situation, and she's like, oh no. And I was like, you're done. I was like, I can see the look in your eyes. And now she's buying 10 packs of it on B&H Photo, you know. Like, it's
so funny how it just grabs you. Yeah, like how takes you and just, I mean, it totally, I mean, same with probably everybody that's listening too. Like, once you get the itch of the whole film thing, I mean, there's just so much to explore. Like, it's not like it used to be, obviously, where things were so much more available and, you know, film was cheap. The way.
Yeah. Right.
I think that has some negative things though. Like, not negative, but I really do believe that the digital era, so to speak, refined those who wanted to be a film photographer. So I think it helped, because I think that most of the film photographers got kind of copacetic in the way they were doing things. Digital came along, then there was this fight, and then all these digital photographers were like, oh, I can do this. And then a whole bunch of them were like, wait, I don't really like this. And then they went and sought out film. And now we're seeing this kind of like, it's just like music. I always compare it to music, because we were at the mercy of what the record labels gave us for years. And we were at the mercy of what Kodak gave us, or Fuji. And that was it, really. And I mean, yes, there were tons of film stocks. But the point being is that you kind of had to do what everybody else is doing. And then now it's like, I can go on to Spotify or Bandcamp and find the most obscure music ever. And I kind of treat the film that way now. Like, I can browse around, I can buy some expired film or new film, and I buy this little toy camera or this really expensive camera, and then I can go mess with it. And it kind of, the digital age revolutionized my way of thinking about film. And now I like the best of the both worlds. So it's been nice.
Yeah. I like that. So you said you were a banker. What?
Yeah.
Did you, could you like look at your life now and be like, I can't even believe.
Yeah, no.
Like, 'cause you're on like one path, and then all of a sudden this other thing grabs you, and now you're like on this completely different, like, artsy.
Right. I think the banking thing had kind of fell into my lap. And I always like, there's always like these moments in my life, and they usually happen every 10 years or so, where there's something impactful comes along, and then either I follow it or I don't. And at that time, I dropped out of college because I couldn't pay for it and wasn't really a fan of it. And my parents divorced, and it was just this whole big time in my life. I was around 19. And my friend at that time, his dad worked at a bank. It was like vice president of a bank. And I was like, I just need a job real quick. I need to figure out what I'm doing. Just get me steadied out and everything like that. And I took it. And it was never supposed to be anything, but I just took it and made some good money pretty quickly, worked my way up. And like in 2-3 years, I was in management and was assistant vice principal or something, or not assistant vice president of this branch. And everything was kind of like going smoothly if you look at that 9-to-5 thing, right? Like, I was doing what my family wanted me to do. And I always kind of wanted to be in the creative arts, but I never had that support where someone would say, you got to follow your dream. It was more like, do this, settle down, and do this. And I was making more money than my friends who were in college were making. So I was like, why wouldn't I do this?
Yeah, I got to be doing something, right? Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then I was in management for a few years and ran a couple community branches of a bank. And one day I was just kind of like, I can't do this. Like, I can't, I had never seen myself doing that for the rest of my life. And I just made this kind of decision. And it took some time to actually make happen, but in my head it kind of a switch flipped, and I was like, I can't do this. I can't do this for the rest of my life. And that's when I started actively pursuing the one thing that I knew that I really enjoyed, and that was photography.
Man, so was it like fine art right off the bat, or
no.
You said you were doing like portrait sessions and stuff. What was your work involved during the switch?
It was like my daughter always makes fun of me because she's like, you're the most emo dad ever, and like I just like dark things. I'm not a dark person, I swear. Like, it's not like people are always like, oh, are you sad all the time? And I'm like, just because I listen to sad music doesn't make me sad. I'm happy by listening to the sad music. So
that makes sense,
right? Like,
I was in
the fog this morning because we don't get it much here in Denver, and drove into the mountains for a shoot, and I just light up. And that's just how I am. It's just the rain makes me excited and giddy, and it's dumping snow right now at the end of May, and it's this freak snowstorm.
What?
And, we're supposed to get like 8 inches today.
Oh my goodness.
I know. It's wacky. It was 90 yesterday. So, one of the benefits about living in Colorado is you have violent weather switches. So like I'd out and about in that, and I'm just ecstatic. Like, I find happiness in that feeling. And so I think in the beginning, when I started switching over, when I started becoming a photographer, I mentioned it, I would go out in these Saturday mornings in Pennsylvania, and I would find all these moody, foggy stuff. But then that doesn't pay the bills. So, so what happened was, is it's kind of this convergence of a whole bunch of areas. I was in banking, and at the bank that I was at, I knew a lot of people. And some of them found out I did photographs. And then one of them was like, can you photograph me for a headshot or something? You know, like something simple like that. And I was like, sure, but I've never done this. I only photograph landscapes. I'll give it a shot. Then they liked it. And then somebody else saw it. And then somebody in like the accounting department, their wedding photographer went missing like a week before their wedding or something that. And they're like freaking out. And it was like a backyard barbecue, super chill wedding. And I was like, sure, I'll do that. And so I helped them out, and they were like, oh my God, you're a lifesaver. And then they really liked those photos. And then somebody else saw them. And then somebody would contact me in the bank. And then by the end of that year, that first year, I think 2018, I had like 5 weddings and like 10 portrait sessions.
Man,
and
that's awesome.
It was just from the being where I was. And then that's when I was like, okay, you can make money doing this.
Yeah.
It was April of 2019 where I quit. I quit the bank and the bank.
Good for
you. Yeah, and I went full time. I had a baby, like a 1-year-old, and my partner at that time was supportive. I'll give her that, but scared. Mm-hmm. And then
It's scary.
It's scary.
It's scary.
Yeah. And then it just at that time, it was kind of early in that digital wedding world. And I was one of the people in Philly that were kind of at the forefront of that switch between film and digital. And so I got really lucky with my timing. And the photos were just a little bit more unique in a way, a little bit darker, a little bit moodier for weddings. And it just kind of clicked. And then it skyrocketed from there. But during that entire time, my sole passion for photography has always been the black and white, more darker, moodier stuff. Yeah. And then it just started getting the other, like that just started going deeper and deeper. So I started testing that out with people, doing model sessions and getting standard kind of images back that I liked, but I didn't love. And then I started, I realized that the lab had a lot of control over what my scans look like.
And then
I was like, all right, I got to start processing my own film. And then I could scan the way I wanted to, shoot the way I wanted to. And then it just started getting more moody from there. And then I started gravitating into pack film from all that stuff. And then that's a whole other thing we could talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
do you have a huge stash, or are
well,
you...
so in 2013,
Chris, like, what you got?
All right,
what you got?
So I'll tell you that story real quick. In 2013, when they discontinued 3000B, which was one of the final ones, I was the person who started the petition to get it.
No way!
So I'm on there. Like, that was my petition. I talked to Fuji. I talked to Super Sense.
Wow.
I talked to like some high up rep at Fujifilm in Japan, and nothing worked, nothing could happen, as you know. But at that time, being that I was at that forefront, I bought 120 boxes of the 3000B, and I just finished the last box 2 months ago.
I
made a whole like post on Instagram about it. Like, this is the last box. This is what the final images were, all that stuff. But I never sold a single box. I kept it that whole time. It was sad. It was sad. And I have no more.
Sad.
Yeah.
So yeah, damn. I did stock up. I did have a stash.
I remember that petition. I remember holding our breath. Can we save it? Can we save it? What'd we do?
We tried to get buy a machine, anything that could save it, anything that could just hold it off, like Impossible did, where they were able to get that last plant in Germany and save a few of the machines. And then that guy jumped in too. I can't remember his name.
Doc.
Yeah, Doc. He jumped in. I talked to him a little bit back and forth, and we got the petition, we printed it out and made it really kind of analog and sent it to Fuji. And we're like, this is who you're missing out on. And it's a bummer.
Did they have the machine to sell, or they were just like, we're not selling?
They just said, I'm not selling. The one guy that we talked to at Fuji, the North American rep, was the best rep that I got. His name was Barney, I believe. And he was like, they are not willing to just give up anything. They're not going to sell the machines. They're not going to do anything.
It's so frustrating.
I'm sure there's one somewhere. And there's been a couple people since that have been like, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. And obviously we know that Super Sense did it with the positive, you know, I forget what the number they use on that, but it's pretty cool. It's crazy expensive. No one's gotten close, obviously. And maybe one day we will, but that's been a bummer. That's the only thing that I truly, truly miss. Like, when I do my sessions now, that's the one thing I don't shoot anymore. And I really, really miss those land cameras and having that instant film and the pack film and coming back and using the negatives and things like that. That's one big thing I miss.
Man, totally.
I'm getting all sad.
It's so sad. Yeah, it's sad. It's so sad to see like all the cameras too. Like, you see them everywhere. Like, if you go into any like antique mall or thrift shop or something like that, you just see those cameras. And I remember 10 years ago, the joy of seeing one of those cameras and being like, oh man, this is great. This one's better than the last one that I got. Yeah. I can't wait to, you know.
Yep.
It was just, man, what an era. Like, that was such a good time.
It was great. And I mean, that's the thing where I do miss those old film stocks, you know, like the ones that all Polaroid had and everything like that. And it's a shame, but I mean, I guess it kind of pushes me to do other things and try other things, and crossing my fingers that one day we get something back that's of the same, you know, degree of how well those things worked.
What a celebration that would be. Jeez.
Oh. Yeah, I can't even imagine. We would all freak.
Uh-huh. That's an understatement.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad you shot all of it, though. I feel like, I mean, I hope the work, you can look at the work and know that, like, it, at least it went to a...
It did, a good... Yeah. There were some duds in there, probably my mistake, more than anything, but every pack was used, and it took me 9 years to go through those 120 boxes. So, it was used sparingly, and it was used very efficiently. And I forced myself to only do two packs or one pack per session. And just because I knew how rare it was getting. So, but it was nice. And even the last pack, shooting it and opening it, it was nice. I'm pretty proud of myself, because I took a photo of the last box and that's it. Like I really didn't like, I just ripped it open like I normally do because I was in mid shoot when I was doing it. And I was proud because I didn't stop and like get super emotional about it. I kind of just finished it out on a high.
Yeah.
And finished it out strong and never changed or wavered the way that I shot it. Like I didn't shoot something completely unique where I was like, what am I doing? Like I shot it in the exact same like it was foggy, it was snowing, and I was in a hot spring. So it was like my pretty much perfect kind of mood where I could have shot the last box. So it was cool. Mm.
Amazing.
Now, do you have any plans to do anything with all those photos that you shot?
Yeah, like, should be make a book.
I definitely will make a book in the future. I feel like I need to get a few more series going and then I can kind of have like a full book. I have them all saved. I have all the negatives. I was considering... I sell prints, but when I sell a print, it's a one-off print. So there's only one made. So I don't sell like 10 or 5. So I make one print and then I frame it and then I sell that. And I've been considering selling the negative with the print. So it kind of gives like a really unique feel to it. Like it's like a painter selling their only painting. But the only problem with that, as we know, is they can take that negative and... redo it. So now on the 3000B film, obviously they'd have to, it's a little bit different, but
You'd have to like invert it and all that stuff.
And you have to kind of print digitally. You can't print from the negative, so they can't make like silver gelatin prints from them. But again, it's like, I've been thinking about doing that, but I think what I'll end up doing is setting aside a whole bunch for a book. And then like finding those negatives and then maybe like scanning or copying those negatives and kind of putting them in with the imagery in the book. And then that way it's kind of like this dual thing. I'm not really sure. I've gone through a whole bunch of stuff, but I do plan on doing something with it. I just don't know what. Yet.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about your series since you kind of brought it up. Are those... How like thought out and planned are they, or is it something that turns into a series after the fact, or like you go out with like an intention to create this specific thing?
Yeah, that's a good question because I was actually asked that this morning on my, because I started a new one this morning and she asked the same thing. And they're normally, it all depends on how I'm going. So I started working in series 3 years ago. And the reason why I did that was because I was doing too many one-off sessions where I wasn't getting anything out of it. And then I wasn't getting a relationship with the person out of it. And I firmly believe that when you have a comfortable relationship with the person that you're photographing, you can make so much more in purposeful imagery. And so what I started doing was the first series, I did a whole bunch of this. I did this thing called Veiled Series in 2017. And it was just a way of the reason why I started it was because I was tired of the wedding industry and how fake it was.
Yep.
And so I started feeling really upset about that. And I took a wedding veil that one of my clients let me borrow and I put it over a person and the veil represented this thin line, this thin layer between this over crazy jaded, over cynical wedding industry and like the public. And if you're in the wedding industry, you kind of know what I'm talking about. But if you're not in the wedding industry, a wedding is just a one-off thing for you. And it's just kind of like there's a line there and all the wedding photographers are like, this is crazy over here. And then all the people over here don't really see that. And I've photographed over 420 weddings.
Get out of here.
Yeah. So I've seen everything. Jeez. And so this veil thing was like kind of like it was just I wrote this whole piece on it. It was a session, one-off session. And then I wrote a piece that was like, we've got to like stop faking this industry. It's so insane over here. And I wrote this blog post and it got a little bit of hits, but nothing really happened from it. But it was way more for me than it was everything else. But what it did was it kickstarted an entire whole thing. I did this session entirely on 3000B with this veil.
And I was like, oh, yes, like this is what I've been looking for. And then I brought in more people to that series. And okay, so then I did 10 sessions and with each with a different person. Mm. And what I noticed at the end was it was all under the same entity of the Veil series, but there was no cohesiveness to the imagery. It was kind of all over the place. And it was good, but it didn't work well together. And then after that, I took a little hiatus, went through a whole bunch of personal stuff with, you know, a person and a relationship ended. And that kind of kickstarted me onto this other idea of, right, all right, what didn't I like about this? And then I came to the conclusion that I really want to know the person that I'm photographing better. Mm. And so I did archetype series and I said, I'm looking for one person. We're going to do multiple shoots and I have no idea where it's going to go.
Wow.
And so I found this model, Robin, locally to me, and she was like, I'm in. And then we did like two or three sessions, got comfortable with each other, and she knew kind of what I needed and what I was looking for. And I knew how she moved and how she worked. And then things started clicking. And that's when like I started seeing this cohesive feel and vibe come out in the photographs. And then we sat in front of like 40 of them on the ground and we're like, what is this? And then we started talking. And then she was the one who actually came up with archetype and the name and the thing. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, I love this. And so from that point on, I committed to having the model be part of the project just as much as the photographer, because without them, I'm pointless, really. Like, I can't do it without them helping me. So from that moment on, I went into each one talking to them beforehand. And then we talk about what any ideas we had. And on some of them, we had these predetermined ideas. And then on some of them, like today, we decided to not have that predetermined idea, where we just wanted to shoot and then see how it went. But some of the sessions are very rarely are they one-offs, but they are. But most of them are usually take 3 to 5 sessions. And then the longest one was 8 sessions.
Mm. Wow.
And I like working like that. And it makes me happy. And I don't show any of the imagery until it's all done.
That's good.
So like, and even the Surrender series, I got so upset with Instagram during that series that I didn't show any of the final pictures until I had a show.
Oh, yeah.
And then I did a show and then the 13 were released and then I released them on social media.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really, really nice. And I think I have another show coming up in October and I think I'm going to do fairly the same thing. It'll kind of be a mixture where I'm going to use a few that I've showed, but then there's going to be like 5 or 6 new ones that no one's seen.
Wow.
Ooh, that's so inspiring listening to that. Cause I don't get to do much portrait stuff. I'm more of kind of just your average daily shooter guy. And when I do, I always want to work with the same person over and over again. Cause it's like a dance that you get between the two of you and things. The couple of girls that I did get to work with, we've worked together a couple different times and it's just, it always gets better and better and things just keep coming and like getting more elaborate and more. It's just, I need to get back into that stuff. You got me all hyped up right now.
Like, yeah. It's really, it's a good feeling. And plus I think through the years, I think photographers kind of get this ego and that, you know, that they're the reason that's good. And which is fine. Mm-hmm. Yes. Photographers, you know, some of them are super talented and their work is unique. Yeah. But at the same time, like I believe that photography is a mutual agreement between these two parties. And if you're photographing like a plants or if you're photographing nature and stuff like that, I mean, a lot of these, you're kind of at the mercy of your scene, right? And you can go out and wait. A lot of these wildlife photographers could wait 4 days before they even get the shot that they wanted. And when they get the shot that they wanted, they're immersed in that scene. They've been doing it for hours and hours. And then this kind of timing works out where they knew where they needed to be. They made the light right. They waited for the right moment and then they nailed this shot. And they'll tell you that it takes tons of time to get this one photograph. So that's kind of the same thing in the photography industry. And you know, photographers, a lot of them will go around and they're just kind of like taking their camera and they photograph thing, and then it's like one and done and they're over, and then they move on and they get something they want. And for me, like, I feel like I do so much better when I'm immersed. And if I can immerse into that scene with you, and even if we don't come up with anything at all from that session, it still worked well because I still got to work with them. We still talked. We still, created something together. And even like I did a one-off session in Arizona last week because I couldn't do a series because I was only there for 48 hours, so I couldn't keep going. And it was one of those sessions where if I had gotten no final photo from it, I would have been happy. And because it was just wonderful. It was wonderfully, it was wonderful to shoot it. It was a great model, and we blended well, we got along well, and they were just super into the being what I needed, and I was super into getting the right shots. And it's just one of those things where your brain's just firing all cylinders.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's like a drug in that regard. And I even tell the story of real quick, like I did a shoot for the Surrender series. That series was 5 sessions, and we planned out this one shoot perfectly, timed it right with the light. We had this wonderful scene, and I had 3 packs of instant film. And what I do with instant film is generally is I take a photograph, test my light, peel it, make sure it's good, and then I'll adjust accordingly. And then I'll check. Yeah. I can't peel on scene, otherwise I've got 30 peels with all this. And we were in the middle of a river. Like, I wasn't going to peel 30 things. And
I capped
them all and went back. Was super. I remember leaving the scene going like, oh yes, like this is going to be awesome. This is going to be awesome. And we went back and we got back to their house and I started peeling and it was like black, 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 black. Oh. I didn't hit any of them. Every one of was. I think my land camera died. I have no idea what happened. Mm. But I had one photograph. It was my test photograph. That was semi-exposed properly, and it was a 100C, so it was color. And so with the color, I bleached the negative, and then I scanned the negative so I can get something out of it.
Yeah.
That photo ended up being the best photo of the entire series. It's the only one that I got. It's the one I used for all the marketing. And I don't have anything else to show for that entire session except for this one photo.
Man.
But it was still cool. I still, I still worked with the model and she was super stoked and I was super stoked and it was really neat. And we still did another session after that. But the point being is like, I like to immerse myself with that other person and then we both grow from it and then I can get cool stuff. Mm. And that's usually where the cool things happen.
Yeah. 2 things I want to say about that is like, even on a roll of film, when you get the one, amazing image. Yep. You're like, I don't care about the rest. I got this one. It's the best. Like, I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also what you're saying about like, I loved it, like taking the time with your, cause I mean, obviously you shot weddings or, you know, when you show up the day of like, hi, nice to meet you. We're going to have this like intimate interaction about me, like getting you comfortable and like, you know, we're going to vibe. And sometimes it's harder than other times. And so I just know that, you know, when you are that like in it with somebody, it just makes the whole experience way more rewarding and better.
Oh, it's wonderful. Even that archetype series with Robin, there was two sessions where we drove around looking for the thing and we couldn't quite find what we were looking for. And then we just left and we went home. But like, we didn't take a single photograph. But the point was, is like, we interacted more, we bonded more, we became more friendly. And it just helped. And now I'm even planning to go and meet with her in New England in the summer and do a whole other series that we've come up.
That's cool.
And that's only because we just had fun together.
You're friends now. Right. Like, yeah,
we had fun together.
Cool.
And she fully trusts me. Yeah. And I fully trust that, you know, her, and that we're going to make some cool photographs. And that's that's the point, you know, like that's half the reason why I do it that way.
Yeah. And when you mentioned, I saw like on your website when I was checking out the series, it's like you always have like a blurb from the model. When I first started reading it, I was thrown off because I thought you were talking. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, I was like, wait, what's happening?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh,
almost all like, the series. I go to the model.
That's
I'm
so
like,
cool.
Hey, what, tell me your thoughts on this. So that I feel, and maybe I'm wrong, but it's just my feeling, but I feel like especially in photography, there's a massive disconnect between the model and the photographer. And we treat mm-hmm. the model in most cases like it's just a subject, like a prop. And they're not. And yes, if you're a fashion photographer and you get hired on the scene and you got to show up and shoot that, I get that. Like, I'm not saying every single thing needs to be immersive, but I'm saying if you have the time and you have to, and you want to grow as a photographer, we're all people, you know, like we all deserve that respect. And I try to balance that respect and say, look, I can't do it without you. You are literally, I need you to make this thing here. So I'm going to give you as much respect as I possibly can and talk to them and ask them what's going on and how they feel and if they're okay and what they're feeling about this thing. I send them previews. Like, I text them. I'm like, hey, what do you think about this? Like, I can't decide between A or B. What are your thoughts? And they're like, definitely A. So they have a decision process, you know, like they're part of it because they're part of the thing because it's part of them. And I feel like that's kind of been lost in a lot of photographers over the years. And for me, it's important that I keep that and retain that.
Awesome.
Yeah. And two, you know, two heads are always better than one too. Cause you know, you could have your favorites and they could see something that's completely different in the work.
Absolutely. I've had a couple of times where they're like, I like this one. And I'm like, I don't like that one. And then like, I'll come back to it and then I'll do it. And sometimes I override them. Like I'm sometimes brutally honest, but I'm honest in a positive, like I'm not mean. I'm just saying like, you know, I'm going with my gut on this one. Like it's gotta be this. And when we're shooting, I'm like, all right, let's not do that. Like, let's try this. And I even said to the model this morning, I'm like, look, if you have anything that pops in your head, anything, do it. And I will make it work. Like, I'll make it fit into my thing. I don't want you to ever feel like you can't try something if just because I'm not telling you to do it. So if you see something or have an idea, or you have something pops in your head about a position or a movement, tell me and like, let's try it. Cause I might be like, no, that's not going to work. At least I'll know. And we'll kind of check it off the checkbox, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So has this work that you've been doing, this, you know, all these portraits and all these ideas and stuff, has this led to anything commercially for you? Have you been hired to do any of this stuff?
No.
No.
No. I mean, I think one day I'll get there. It is dark and moody, and dark and moody is never going to be mainstream. Unfortunately, it's just not. I don't think it's
that's sad.
I know.
I love dark
and
moody.
But that's the way it is. Like, think about all the dark and moody photographers and artists that we've known over the years. And yes, some of them are popular now. You know, like Francesca Woodman, super dark and moody woman. By the way, she grew up like 15 minutes from where I live.
Wow.
So, like, which is amazing. So, I visited some of those graves sites that she shoots to. Are you guys familiar with her? I'm guessing you are.
I'm not.
I've heard. Yep.
Okay. So she's just super popular. Well, popular now, but she wasn't. And she was in the 60s and 70s, and she was from Boulder, and she was making these extremely dark and like photographing herself nude at 16.
Whoa.
Really progressive. And she got a lot of crap for it. Went to Rhode Island school for photography, and then committed suicide at 22 in New York City. But her work is 40 years ahead. You could post one of those on Instagram today and people are like, oh my God, this is so cool. And it was in 1968. And so it's way ahead of her time.
Wow.
And the only reason why I know about her is because I've gotten people over the years being like, this reminds me of Francesca Woodman. And like 2016, 2017, I started getting it. And I was like, oh, holy shit. Like, she was way before me.
Yeah.
Like, this woman is amazing. And so I found out she grew up here, and she has these really kind of emo photographs of her around gravestones and it's in Boulder, and I found the actual gravestones that she was photographing in.
Wow.
So that's pretty cool. I don't even know where the heck I got onto that. So how did I even get to
Francesca?
Oh, we're
talking about commercial.
Woman? Yes.
Yeah, so, I was just wondering if you were...
So her, who now they found her like 20 years ago, and she's started growing in popularity, and now she's got the foundation, her family has the foundation. Both her parents were Boulder artists, and they passed away a few years ago. And now there's the Francesca Woodman Foundation, and then they have all the negatives, and then they sell the negatives, and now they're really valuable. But it took a very long time for that to happen. And I feel like that kind of moody stuff is rare. To be out there, because it doesn't sell. Like, if I was posting color, I think it'd probably do a little bit better. But like, I think that from a commercial standpoint, it's very hard because I'm very niche.
Right.
It has
to be
this really, really right. Like, the best person I can think of that's close to it that I know is commercial is Paolo Reversi. You know, he's darker, shoots 8x10 Polaroid. It tends to be pretty moody, and he'll shoot for like Versace or Gucci or something like that here and there. But again, 99% of the public won't know who he is.
Right.
And so it's not that commercially viable thing. However, that doesn't mean that it can't happen. But no, I haven't. Yeah, I haven't been asked commercially. I don't feel like it's a path that I'll go down. I really am pushing for the kind of more painting or painterly background of like making these photographs that you can only get one of or here and there of, and that's it.
That's cool.
And then that way there's no 30 of them or 50 of them and trying to go that way.
I like
but I
that.
Could be wrong.
Man, that's smart though. I like that. I like that idea.
Michael, I also want to talk to you about the agency.
Ember?
Yeah.
Sure. That's,
you started that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk to us about that.
When I got here to Colorado in 2017, it was right at the end of that was the year I said that I made that series where I was kind of really jaded about the wedding industry and how just kind of odd it is. When I came here, when I first got into photography, going back a bit, the portraits fell into my lap. I never really set out to do portraits. My first initial thing when I started doing photography was I wanted to do photography for like small businesses and more of the creative side. Like, I wanted to start a creative agency, so to speak, where I had like graphic design, photography, and like website design. That was the original thing. And then portraits fell into my lap, and then they paid me nicely for them. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of stuck with that. And then one of the things that I made myself do when I came to Colorado was get out of weddings. And so I spent that first year kind of going back and forth to Philadelphia, finishing out weddings, and then second year too. And then transitioning over to more of a content side. And then since social media got popular, and that, which obviously was not in 2009, social media made it easier for me to get these places where brands or artists and say, hey, I can create this for you. You can put this on a website. You can put this here. You can put this over here. And so I transitioned out of weddings and into this. But even then, my original intent was solely content creation on the photography side, just photography. And then what I started realizing right away, I got one or two artist clients here that are pretty big, well-known artists in the country, in the region. And they were like, I need this. I want this. I don't want to do Instagram. I don't want to post content. I don't want to take photographs. And they were tired of hiring a photographer for all these kind of like one-off things. And then they'd never work with them again. And then they'd try somebody new or they didn't work out. So I got these two clients and I said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do this a little bit differently. Use me for a few months. I'll extend that kind of discount to you and say, thank you for using me and solidifying me for a few months. But trust me that the content is going to be good. And then, so we tested this kind of thing, and
it took off basically from there. So what I do is I do social media and content management for artists and brands, but I stay away from like the typical marketing kind of formula where I'm using the content as marketing. It's organic marketing. I'm not, marketing agencies will be like, all right, pay me $50,000 and we'll promote you all over the place.
Right.
Okay. Now, I'm taking a reverse philosophy of that. I'm saying here, you're going to pay me this way, in like it's a monthly rate. And then I'm going to constantly create for you. And what that means is that you have the same core style and consistency through your offerings on social media and your website, and it looks cohesive.
Yeah.
And because I firmly believe that the key to social media is consistency. Everybody can rise and fall, and there'll always be someone skyrocket, and there'll always be something that does bad. But if you stay consistent, it's a really good way of pushing yourself up to the, you know, where you want to go.
Yeah.
And it might take you 4 years, but I know way more success stories with the people that have been doing it for 4 years and forget to finally breathe than I do where they skyrocket and then they plummet.
Right.
And then they're screwed. Yeah. So my whole thing with it is consistency. So I started this agency that works. We provide content and PR for artists and brands, mainly artists. Mm-hmm. And then I do all like the video content, photography content, social media management. And then I have a person who reaches out to galleries, reaches out to blogs, podcasts, like you guys, and says like, hey, we have this client, you know, we think that they might be a good fit with you. And they're like, oh, okay. And then that helps the artist. And then it kind of just like funnels each other.
So smart. Because there's so many people who are bad at all of that.
Yes.
That like,
that would be so many.
Like getting it. Like I've always, like I enjoy that side of like, I mean, I run our social media. I'm like guest relations, if you want to give me like a proper title.
Right.
But some people just can't, you know,
they can't.
They just, it's not part of their, especially if, you know, super artistic or musicians or like, I know how to write songs. I don't know how to do this other stuff. And that's really cool.
I believe that, like I said this earlier, like every 10 years or so, something kind of happens. And I think that I needed the finance background to get to where I am right now. Because the finance background, I worked with small businesses constantly, like getting them loans or starting up the storefront or doing all this. And I learned a ton of stuff about banks, basic things like checking accounts small business loans and loans and leasing and buying equipment and all these things. And what that did, and also sales. Like I learned how to talk to people and say, here's what you need, and be kind and truthful without being a douchebag about it. And they're like, oh, you're right. So what I learned from that 10 years of small business stuff is how to apply that to this side of the business. So the best compliment I get, and I've gotten it a few times now, is like one of my painter clients was like, you're like the best of both worlds. You're super creative because I can see your fine art stuff, but you also are business side where you're like on time. And you know what you're doing and you're on schedule and you know what the next thing is and you stay on top of all the content and everything like that. And she's like, I can't do any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Like I cannot get myself to do it. And that's where I come in. So
that's great.
But I've gotten so good at it, like that some of these clients who I've been with for almost 3 years now, when I go there, they're painting and they're like, all right, what do you think? What direction should I go in? And I'm like, really? Okay. Like here we go. This is the way we're going. You know, I'm like, I think you should do this. I think you should do this. And you're like, you're so right. Again, it's that whole background of the agency is built on being immersed with that person.
Oh, that's cool.
And kind of blends together in that way and feel of everything.
Do you keep it small? Like, how many clients? Yeah.
I have a lot of clients, but so right now I have 10 consistent clients, and I'm kind of at this peak where I keep telling people this, like I hit a peak where I'm at it right now and I can't take more, but I want to, but I need to find somebody else who's me here to do that. And that's the hard part.
Yeah.
So like, but I have about 20 to 30 clients. A lot of them, like 20 of them are probably
more, I'll use you here. And mm-hmm. for like a month, and then I won't see him again for 6 months or so. But I have about 10 to 12 every monthly clients.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's been pretty wicked. And plus it gets me into the art world, and yeah. I get to funnel around in there. And I'm like, yesterday I was at a shoot and she's like, oh, do you know this person at this gallery? I'm like, I do. And then now I'm like reaching her out to that gallery on her behalf. And now she's going to be excited.
That's cool.
So there's all these like little connections and stuff that I love.
I wanted to ask you one more thing before we ask you the questions here.
Sure.
Talk to us about your retreat.
Oh, the Taos one?
Yeah, it sounds like a dream just from like a reset creative.
So here's another whole thing that I find myself in these weird things. I have to go, like, I've been made fun of, like my ex makes fun of me for this all the time. She's like, if they go this way, you've got to go this way. I'm like, that's not really true, but I get what you're saying. Like I can see how you're saying that kind of thing, but it's not on purpose. Yeah. I'm not listening to this musician because they're popular. Mm-hmm. I'll admit it. I do kind of like Billie Eilish. I love that. I'm not dissing her at all. I'll vibe to it. But also at the same end, I'll go all the way over here. And my daughter makes fun of me for this. She's like, the records you play are the most obscure, weird stuff. And yeah, and she's right. Like you'll go on Spotify and there's this like 100 active listeners. You know, there's nobody. And so like, I kind of,
I'm in that world with you, man. I feel that I'm buying
Bandcamp albums and like, they're uh-huh. responding to me on Instagram. They're like, whoa, your work's cool. I'm like, your work's cool. Uh-huh. And then, you know, like that's where I get the thrill of it. Like mm-hmm. buying the record and the merch and that stuff. That's where I get into it. But that doesn't mean I don't like popular things. So in our industry, as you both probably know, workshops are huge.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, I'm just going to say it, I just think they're just like MLM marketing schemes. Hmm. It's basically like someone saying, here's what I do, go do it. And then 10 people go and do the same thing. And then 2 years later, five of those people are holding workshops and then they're doing the same thing, which is fine. If that's what you want to do, go for it. But that's not what I want to be a part of.
Yeah.
A few years ago, I got together with a buddy of mine and we held this retreat in 2017. It was right after like the whole political thing and Trump and all that stuff. And it was like kind of just we needed a reset. Mm-hmm. And we decided to do this retreat and we didn't want to do a workshop. That was something that we didn't want to do. We didn't want to go there and people pay to learn what we do. We wanted people to be able to go and talk to us, but also talk to everybody else. And you're going there for the experience and not to sit in front of a computer and look how we edit in our scans. Or, you know, he was more digital, I was more film. Like, I'll show you what I'm doing with my camera, but I'm not teaching you what I'm doing with my camera, if that makes sense. So we did this retreat and it was freaking awesome. And it was 3 days on the northern coast of California and everybody had a blast. And we made it affordable.
Yeah.
It was like 3 days, 2 nights. We bought all the food. We took everybody out to dinner and I made them breakfast every day and like we just relaxed and we had like formalized things. Like we said, here's where we're going to go over here and watch we're going to go see the sunset along the coast and get this light. But we didn't go in with the intent to photograph things. We went with the intent to experience it. And then yes, we all had cameras. But no one was like teaching how to do things. It was just a fun little get together. And we did two of those and I've always wanted to do another one. So I finally felt like I was at the mental capacity to offer one. And so we announced, with my partner, actually, we announced this one in Taos like a few weeks ago or a month ago. And basically it's again, the same concept, 3 days, 2 nights, all inclusive. At this old bed and breakfast the middle of Taos. And we're going to shoot, like we're going to go out and photograph things, but we're, you're not there to be taught what I do. You're right. There to listen and talk to me and with me alongside other artists. And my goal is to, I want to sit with you and do what we're doing right now. All the things that we talked about right now are what I want to talk about there. The ego of photographers, or where we see the social media going, or why is film, you know, so important to us, or, you know, even if it's what is the difference between medium format and 35 millimeter, I'll talk to you for an hour about it, more than an hour. So the point is, like, it's just learning and guiding, not so much like workshop. And then I try to keep it at a good price where I feel like you're going to spend that regardless. If you go on a 3-day trip into the mountains and you have to pay for all your food, you're going to spend more than what we're charging.
Right.
So it's kind of like, I'm not in it to make a ton of money. I'm in it to provide like this cool time away.
What I love about that is like when I was scrolling through, I was like, man, this sounds amazing. I love that there's no real structure. It's like, we're going to hang out.
Yep.
We're going to talk. But then there's creative times. You can go do yoga. You can go write. You can go do. And I was like, man, just having like even what you're saying, like we, Tim and I are lucky we get to talk to people a lot about this kind of stuff, but other people, my husband's not into it, or my partner's not into it, or like my brother's here, done hearing me talk about the cameras. Like going and being around creative people is like such a soul recharge.
Mm-hmm.
And it, you know, even that alone is going to inspire so many people. And I just love that you're keeping it affordable and you're keeping it like this is your retreat, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah, we're keeping it super.
I was like, oh, I want to go.
Yeah, I'm not getting like sponsors, and it's not this big, huge thing where we're trying to get 45 people to go. It's just kind of, go, like come along and do it. And we're even doing a thing where like we're maxing it at 10 people and we're shooting for like 6 to 8. And I'm saying like, no, I can't do 10. More than 10. And then we're saying we're actually giving a grant of $500 back to someone who after the retreat can submit like a thing. And it says like, here's like, this retreat was badass. Here's what I want to do. Like, I have this idea in my head where I want to go do this. And, you know, and then apply. You have a 1 in like 8 chance of getting the $500 back, which basically makes it almost like nothing unless you have to fly there. So like we're even doing that, and because I really value the importance of people lifting up the industry and like and doing it in a way where it's like, I've seen plenty of people that are super popular and super famous photographers, and they're like, you can come to my workshop, it's $3,000. All right, and 20 people show up and they make tons of money and you never talk to them again. And that's great. Go do it. And if you want to pay for it, go pay for it. That's your choice. But for me, that's not really how this whole thing works. And my objective, I really, really wish that I went to something small like that in my first years. And then they're like, and then I went to them and was like, I have this idea of shooting all this film to document this specific thing over here. And I'm like, yeah, apply for our little grant. And here you go.
That's so cool.
And that's kind of what it's all about for me, at least. So
amazing.
It's going to be cool. We have a few spots still available. So if anybody is interested, I mean, it's open.
Yeah. We'll definitely link it in the show notes too.
We'll be right back with a listener question for Michael right after this message from our sponsor.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
just wanted to pop in here quick and let you guys know about our Develop and Hang Nights. Now, this is a Patreon-only exclusive. We've done a bunch of these already. We hang out, we develop some film, we talk shop, we try to get a former guest for these. It's just a great time. And like we always say, Patreon is the best way to help support the show. If that sounds like something you're interested in, head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. Thank you. All right, guys, this is the part of the show where we break off and take a question from one of our listeners. And this week's question comes from godinez.co. And they wanted to know, I still remember his wedding photography career. What made him stop?
It's hard to walk away from that, too. Like, forget, like,
yeah,
the...
Yeah,
the,
especially when you did, like, yeah, that's still, yeah, plus yeah, of
it
them.
Was, it wasn't easy. I really don't think that there's one particular thing. It's not like something, I went to a wedding and something happened. And I was like, I'm done. And yeah, it was it. More of, I felt, I think a lot of wedding photographers after about 10 years start to feel burnt out. And it's an industry that's changing and evolving constantly. And you kind of have to keep up with trends. And it's definitely an industry that's geared more towards a younger person, in my opinion. Like, there, you don't know many 60-year-old wedding photographers. And they're out there.
Very
but
true.
I think for me, it wasn't giving me the satisfaction of that kind of final result anymore. And I didn't want to do the disservice to my clients of not being fully into it. And so I used the transition of coming to Colorado and moving to Colorado as my a way out. So it was kind of like I knew I was moving, and that was one reason. I was feeling a little bit cynical and jaded, and that was another reason. I was feeling burnt out a little bit, and that was another reason. And I still actually do weddings here and there. Like, I just did one a month ago.
Okay.
I just don't really advertise and show it off. But if someone came to me and was like, and said, I absolutely adore your black and white photography, will you photograph my wedding in all film? I'd be like, yes. Because it would be so exciting. But it was the combination of those three things. And I do believe that if you're not fully behind something, if you can't give it the energy it deserves, it's not going to be good. And I didn't want there to be, I left on a high note. I left on like my clients being happy and everybody super stoked about the photography. And I didn't want to have this be at this point where I would show up and they would notice me being not fun or miserable, how terrible would that be? So I just said, all right, this is a good reason and to get out. And here's my move to Colorado. I'm going to do it when I do that because I have to transition anyway. So that was the reason behind it.
Smart. Yeah.
I do miss them though. Yeah. Some days, like I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh man, like this would be really cool. And I did one in like the mountains of Colorado in about a year ago, and it was super fun. It was like 4 hours long and it was super chill. And I had a blast. Like I do like them.
Yeah.
It's just not 40 a season.
Right. No.
And I started, people in the wedding industry, they like a certain look. And whether you can say all you want, like I only do black and white photography at weddings, but you're kind of throwing in some color ones in there because they want them.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, do you do the family shots of this? I completely understand it. So it's very hard to find a client that is willing to let you completely and utterly go on your own. And I've had them. I had a couple of them. And like I did one wedding, it was like 80% Holga.
Whoa.
Oh, man.
So there is that. They're out there. It's just hard to sustain that.
Yeah.
Right? Like you can't, they're few and far between. So it was time. That's but good. Hey, if you get married and you want some cool photos, like Michael's your guy.
Yeah,
let's do it,
man. Cool. Good answer. All right, now we got to give you the two-part toughie. It is the desert island. You can only choose one camera for the rest of your life. What is it gonna be and why?
Well, I just alluded to it.
Yeah, I was wondering if it was going to be the Holga. Yeah.
I think that's a first, too.
I think it might be a first, yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
There is something, like, it is such a rudimentary camera, which makes it absolutely a pain in the ass to work with.
But then when you hit it, it's just on point
yeah.
for me.
Yeah.
It has this kind of like painterly look, even if it's in focus and it's good, it still has this kind of like yeah. out of focus look. It's, you can't overthink the darn thing. Mm-mm. Like seriously, like you've got a cloudy setting and you've got a sunny setting.
Yeah.
And then you've got, it doesn't even have apertures. It just says like one person portrait.
Yeah.
And then it's like group. And then it goes to like the mountains.
Yep.
And you're like, oh, I guess this is infinity.
Yep.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So it's so basic and so cheaply made. I mean, $29.99 gets you the camera of your dream.
There you
I
go. Know.
And it shoots medium format film.
Yeah.
And I can put in the little 5x7
insert thing. Yeah.
Insert. And you could even get that kind of thing, which I rarely do, but you can. But what it does is it's the only camera that forces me to think on my feet.
Yeah.
Like heavily think on my feet. Because if I'm in a situation where light is diminishing quickly and you have a Holga, which is rated at F8 and F11 on their uh-huh. sunny and cloudy setting,
yeah. yep.
you
yep.
need to know what you're doing from a mental standpoint. Because this is why I like film so much. Your ISO is rated. You have no choice but to work with it.
Yeah.
It's already in your camera. You can't take it out. And then your camera is your tool. It's your paintbrush, so to speak, to sound super cliche, but it's that tool. And you have to work within the parameters of that. And it's like kind of like giving a painter one brush and like
yeah.
one paint tube and saying, right. here you go. And the good ones are going to be able to make something from it. And then there's going to be some that are going to be like, I can't do anything.
Yeah. Right.
And so I think for me, I need to be challenged just as much as I care about the end result. And as I've alluded to a few times in the thing, like part of the whole thing is the process rather than that final photograph. The final yeah. photograph is just the icing on the cake.
Yep.
Right. Like that's yep. the one thing that makes it all end, so to speak. But I love to be challenged. If I'm challenged, then I make some of my best work ever. And being out on the New York street with 100 speed Kodak Ektar because your clients are 2 hours late to the session and you ran out of literal daylight. So you're shooting under street lights with Ektar is one of those things where you're like, what in the hell is happening?
Yeah.
And then like you get them back because you've worked it, you know, and figured it out. And then they're the most unique photographs you've ever shot.
Damn. Mm.
Don't put yourself in that position. So that's kind of why I like the Holga.
Man.
And it's just, it forces me to adapt. And I use bulb mode a lot, almost exclusively. And I'm I'm gauging the light with my bulb speed. So like when that light diminishes, I go like a little bit longer. And then I've got to slow down my hands and then I got to stop my movement.
Wow.
So there's all these like little factors that come into it. And just on the challenge alone, I go with the Holga.
Dude, love it.
And plus, like, you can tell, like, really, like, lends itself to your style.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
It's the only camera that I can safely say that lends itself to my style for sure. And even recently, like, I've been shooting my Raleigh a lot. Like, I usually go between the Raleigh and the Holga.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been shooting the Raleigh more, and the reason why is because I've been forcing myself to work that camera in ways it's never been worked, like working with like longer exposures and movement on the camera.
Wow.
and kind of moving the camera around and putting it in positions I've never put it in before, just because I'm trying to see how far I can go with it.
Mm.
But even then it's like almost too good, where like I get back the photograph sometimes and I'm like, okay, Rolly, this is too sharp.
Yeah, this is what I'm gonna say. This is way too right. sharp if you're used to it.
So the Holga is just kind of like my painterly camera. It's the one that I can paint the best with. And yeah. I've always said I've always wanted to be a painter. I just don't feel like I'm very good at it. And
same.
This is my way of painting. And the Holga gets me to that point.
Man, you make me want to bust one out. I haven't shot
bust
a Holga.
It out.
Like, I think I put one roll through a Holga, I think.
Holga went, like, I'm pretty sure they stopped making them, like, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And they just have them on the market still.
I think somebody brought them back. Something Did happened they? Where they're back. Yeah, yeah.
Well, good.
Why not get one?
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
amazing then. Get one. I'm telling you, like, it'll change the way you shoot. Because if you can make something work with that camera, all your other yeah. good cameras start to become like, oh. Like, I started shooting the roll again. I'm like, oh, you're easy.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I got settings on here. Oh, my gosh. Like, this is wonderful.
That's
so,
hilarious.
Like, I think it helps me as a photographer. Like, I don't think it does. I know it does.
That's amazing. Yeah.
I know it does. And the other one is the Instax. Like, that thing's a great little camera, too. Like, trying to... Oh, because I got the... I'm sorry, I'm extending this, but that Instax Lomo Wide. Have you guys ever seen that one?
Yeah, I have one right there. I don't know if you can see right the white guy right there.
Oh, yeah. So bulb mode.
Yeah.
So that's the only reason why I got it is because it has bulb mode because I treat it like the Holga. And I've been exploring that thing lately, and I'm about to like post some shots from that.
Ooh,
and
cool.
Oh, it's getting up there now because I can use the bulb mode.
Yeah.
And I live in that kind of longer exposure thing. And even like some of the shots that I shot like 1/15th on Rolly, it's still like sharp because I can hand hold it.
Yeah.
Like pretty well now. So, yeah. Sorry, that was long.
No. Love it. Love it. We could do this all day.
I know.
Yeah. So could I, as you can tell.
All right. So part two of this question is the white whale. Is there a camera out there that you've always wanted to own or shoot? It can be something that you have shot already that you just, you know, you're it, just something that you're lusting after, you know, something that's always, you know, gotcha.
Yeah, I'll wrap this around to the whole beginning of our conversation. I have been dreaming up the RZ again. That is the one camera that I've had everything, really. I've tested everything I need to for my brain because I need to know if it works for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
7.2 from Mamiya is a great camera. It just doesn't work with my style. I've tried all, you know, the Hasselblads and all the other cameras like that, even the Bronica, stuff like that. I've had the Leicas. Just doesn't lend itself to my style. Mm. I always come back to kind of square format and the Rolly because I can look down and it slows me down, and the Holga because obviously I said those things, but the RZ, it is forcefully slow and bulky and huge. And I look through it 4 or 5 times before I actually take that final photograph. Mm. And that shutter is like one of the best sounding shutters.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Besides like that Pentax 6.7, that the Mamiya shutter is just, it's just a clunk.
The Hasselblad has a good shutter sound too, though.
It does. It does have a good shutter sound.
What made you not stick with the Hasselblad since you're a square format person?
I shot the Hasselblad 501C the same time as I shot the Rolly that I have, the 2.8 Rolly. I had them both in my hands and I tested them both. And the way that I feel when I look in through the Rolly felt better to me than how the Hasselblad did.
Okay.
And I'm a big feeling person. So if I'm not feeling good with the camera in my hand, I'm not good with it. Like, it's why I don't like any of the DSLRs. They just feel too clunky to me in my hand. So I shot all Leica for weddings, rangefinder. Mm-hmm. So that was like that because I felt like that worked with my style a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But then, yeah, the RZ is, I've been considering it lately. I'm really bummed that I sold that thing a long time ago.
Yeah.
But all the other ones, I feel like I've tried. I really do feel like I've tried, so I'll go with the RZ.
Man, nice. Good answer.
Good answer to both.
Yeah,
I love the how different they are. The first part of the question and
Totally. They're totally completely different. I'm pretty sure if you dropped an RZ on the Holga, it would
crack.
The Holga would shatter into
gone.
Actually, you know what? Those things are like the old Nokia cell phones.
Uh-huh.
Like I drop them all the time, and my clients are like, "Oh my god, is it okay?" I'm like, "It's plastic."
yeah, it's fine.
I'm like, I'll probably get better photographs now.
Yeah,
like, something will happen to this where I'll get a light leak in it, and it'll be awesome. So yeah, so I'm totally, and plus I can replace it for $29. So
yeah,
yeah, that's the main benefit. It's like you can get one for cheap still.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it is wonderful. I know. I first told my like partner that she's like, "What did you shoot these on?" From like one of the first series. I was like, "These are all in Holga." She's like, "Are you kidding?"
The old plastic fantastic.
The old plastic fantastic. Yeah. Film. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Michael, this has been such a great conversation. I'm fired up. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah. You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Where can everybody check out? You can plug your Instagram. Please plug the retreat. Where can we find you?
Instagram is michaelash.smith. And retreat information is on my website, michaelashsmith.com. Anything else is on my website. There's even a few pieces left from the last show. If I can even plug that will probably won't be gone once the show starts. So you can even grab one of those one-off pieces. I think there's four left of the 13. So cool. So even that, but everything's on there. Yeah, michaelashsmith.com and the Instagram is where I keep pretty much everything. So
cool.
Awesome.
Timothy, where are you?
Guys, I'm on Instagram and Twitter. It's at Timothy Makeups. I also have some YouTube stuff. Easiest way to find that is just go to the search bar and type in Timothy Makeups. That's it for me. Chris, where are you?
So I'm Chris B. Photo on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We have an Analog Talk podcast Instagram. That's Analog Talk Podcast. We have more Analog Talk Pod on Twitter. And we have a Facebook. Find us there. Michael, thank you. This has been phenomenal.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Definitely.
All right, guys. We'll see you in the next one. Bye.
All right. First off, we'd like to thank Michael for coming on the show. Chris and I are completely obsessed with your work. Your black and white portraits, it's just, man. And then knowing that a lot of it's Holga and Peel Apart, just such a great story. Thanks so much for taking the time to hang out with us. We can't wait to see what the future holds for you. Guys, that's going to take us to Patreon. Head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. For only $1, you can get the show 2 days early. We also have our develop and hang over there and a bunch of other stuff. For the Patreons that already help support the show, guys, we do not know what we would do without you. Thank you. Patreon is the best way to help support the show. So head over to patreon.com/analogtalk. All right, that's going to be it for this week. Thanks again, Michael, for coming on the show. Guys, if you get a second, head over to iTunes and give us a rating. It doesn't have to be 5 stars. It just helps get the show recognized a little bit more. But yeah, until next week, we will see you soon with an all-new episode. Later, guys.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.